The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Okay, Planet People, welcome to the show Heaps More Energy, where we discuss all things climate change, energy efficiency, and what's doable daily. And part of what we get exposed to is of the three mantras in terms of survival, and Maslow's dog, or his theory of survival, is food, shelter, and clothing. So we've done quite a lot of coverage on the food side and food scarcity, and today we have the pleasure of meeting Vincent Revel, who is a project manager for the co-housing project in Takaka, and he'll explain to us a lot more about what it's all about. And my introduction to this concept came way back in 2020. There was a seminar down in Motueka, and it was to do with the whole concept of small housing and tiny houses. So there's a whole genre around here. So without further ado, I'll welcome Vincent to the show. Vincent, thank you for coming in, and we look forward to hearing about co-housing. If you can explain where that's coming from and how it, say, differs from the likes of the Riverside community. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Kev. Well, the co-housing is nothing new. It's a model that we see quite a bit of overseas. Lots of European countries have it, but it is something that's relatively undeveloped in New Zealand, a sector of housing. And what essentially co-housing is trying to achieve is it's creating neighbourhoods which foster better connection between people. So people knowing each other, people collaborating, and improving the quality of life that you end up having through that way of living. So the project in Takaka, my colleague Simone, it was really her brainchild several years ago, and she had a vision that she wanted her children to grow up in an intergenerational community where they have exposure on a regular basis to more than just the immediate family, having those wider connections where you know your neighbours. And so really housing is the means to the end to achieve that. And so what is different about the co-housing neighbourhood is it's probably best to think of it as being actually not that different from a conventional residential development that people would be quite familiar with, but we make a few strategic tweaks to the model that deliver a much superior outcome to the experience of people living there.
Okay, let's say I'm a townie in Motueka, Upper West Side Motueka we call it, but that's just because it's a small town. And we have fences, and we have streets, and we have light poles and all that kind of stuff. When I looked at your website, I noticed there were houses in circles. And coming from Africa, that bit reminds me of the fur trekkers, where they used to put their carts around a circle. So that might be a very loose interrelation comparison. But how would I benefit, say, and I'm thinking of, if I wanted to sell up, why would I consider co-housing and the benefits thereof when I don't have a fence? And is that cheaper because I don't have fences, or is there more interactions? And what's the sort of multiplier benefits of it all?
Yeah, so the driver for you moving into a co-housing development would primarily be wanting more connection with people and your neighbours. So the way a co-housing development typically looks, and it can exist in both an urban environment, and you can get it in more of a rural environment, which is what we see in Takaka. So we very intentionally lay out the neighborhood, if you like, and probably the first thing that's radically different is how we prioritize cars or car parking in our developments. Typically in New Zealand, in a subdivision, you'll see double garage, car coming along the road, you park your cars right up in your house. And what that actually does is that consumes a huge amount of land. When we take the same footprint of land and we keep or restrict cars to off to the side in a car park, and then you walk to your house, it frees up an enormous amount of land for alternative uses, which could be gardens, green space, or community spaces.
So, or would that be a reduced size in the property, because you don't necessarily have to accommodate a car? For instance, my cars are outside cars. I can put shade sails up, so I'm of that genre. I don't need to spend $15,000 or $20,000 for an abode for a car. on a depreciating liability point of view, it's not going up in value anytime soon. So I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, so in the case of Takaka, we probably haven't reduced the amount of land that's there. If you look at sort of a housing density, from a housing density perspective, there's still the same number of houses per hectare. We just end up with a lot more green space around our development.
So from a cost point of view, is it like a sectional title ownership of that land, or is it still, if the bush lawyer in me says it's a fee simple arrangement, so you still have your borders, but borders without borders. The surveyor pegs are in, but they're not fences in between the properties.
It's not fee simple. What we have there is a unit title model. So the best way to think about that is more like an apartment complex you might find in a city somewhere, where you own your apartment and then you own a share of the communal space. Mm. So how it functions in the Takaka co-housing development is everyone owns their own home. They own the exact footprint that home sits upon, and then they collectively own all the surrounding land.
Okay, so you the cost of that and the asset of that is divided by the number of residents or owners in that point of view. So it's a bit like a body corporate.
Yeah, exactly.
In another way of speaking.
We do have actually a body corporate, so it functions exactly like that.
Okay. Let's talk size now in terms of the number of houses. I'm seeing that the website here, this drone effect, is really good because you've got the circle of life of houses around the circle. So that has an attraction because it's got a manner about it. Do people enjoy the fact that they can look out on each other's garden, so to speak? There's a central point. It looks like a dining hall area. Is that like a meeting room?
Yeah, so it's probably good to elaborate on some other key aspects of co-housing. So I've talked about how we accommodate cars and car parking. Probably the second element that's really important to consider is the creation of communal spaces. Mm. And so that's exactly what you've just observed from the aerial view, is in this development, in the center of the development, we've created what's called the common house, which acts as a space. It's got a kitchen in it. It's got a fireplace. It even has a guest bedroom. So it's a space that people can use to host gatherings, to have meetings, and just generally spend some time in there reading a book and just connect with who's ever is in that space.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting. I've just had a little flashback in my head. If you look at the retirement villages, they are taking away from what was a sectional title development for, you know, quarter acre, the old quarter acre block, and then people, you know, become dinkies, dual income, no kids, and then they decide they're going to move out of that. So they go to a retirement home per se. The name is not descriptive enough, but there you've got the body corporate having a group area where everybody joins up, and that's part of the problem with suburbia that we've got. You have to really get out to go and find people, whereas in your case, it's much more easier to connect. And is that the major benefit of car housing?
Yeah, there's just. I mean, there's just so many benefits to connection with regards to mental health, well-being, you know, that addressing that sense of isolation that many people have, particularly in the very digital social media-driven era we live in. But so it does function in principle similar to how it would in a retirement village. The benefit is you're not having the massive wealth loss that you get in a retirement village. Their model is based upon you buying your house, selling it at the same price you bought it for, so all the capital gain is maybe earned by the retirement village. And so here, living in a development like this, hopefully someone would then maybe never need to move into a retirement village because they have that connection and that support right through life.
Would you have a case where there would be part of the co-housing where somebody wouldn't have to necessarily move from there into a retirement village? Could that be a concept within the co-housing concept, just to move one step along?
So could you clarify?
Meaning that if somebody buys in at 50, comes to the 65 age range, do they have to sell up to go elsewhere to retire, or can they use the co-housing model as their retirement continuum?
Yeah, I guess, it's a spectrum of what retirement looks like, and I'm probably talking about something I'm not super across because I'm nowhere near that that age yet. But yeah, potentially, I guess everyone's got a driver for why they're moving into a retirement village. And probably, yep. I imagine the first stage gate there is you're wanting more connection with people. So potentially, because you're already getting this in this village, you don't need to yet move into a retirement village. Yep. But perhaps, you know, further down the line, I imagine one of the drivers might be access to healthcare as you age. And these villages, they're not healthcare facilities, so that it doesn't necessarily change that.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably just delays the point at which someone might need to move into more assisted living.
Yeah. What is the average age of your, I say average age, the nuclear family concept? Are we looking at Gen Y, Gen X, or where is the build, where's the sort of maturity level there?
It's probably pretty reflective of normal society. Okay. We've got young families with young kids. We have people in their 20s, and we also have older families and retired people. Mm. So it captures a spread of society where probably what's more a common theme is with people is not so much about the demographic. It's probably just it's capturing people who want to be more intentional and collaborative of how they're living.
Okay, so quite a few houses. When you look at the website, so how long has it been going, and how many houses have you got up and running, and where's the trajectory going over the next, say, 5 years?
So this was originally a 14 hectare piece of land that was purchased. I think it was before I joined the team, but several years ago. And the first development, which was 34 homes, was completed at the end of 2023, and that's when those 34 units got occupied. We've now got a resource consent for a further 60 odd homes over the rest of the land. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a mixture of co-housing developments and more conventional residential developments.
Mm-hmm.
And about half of those we're currently progressing and have on the market for sale.
That's pretty spectacular growth, really, in terms of, and it's across the big hill. So it's in Takaka. People finding work within the Takaka economy, or are they travelling away from that? Are they saying, look, I'll need co-housing more than I need to travel, therefore I'll do co-housing and travel to my work?
Yeah, there was definitely a very strong element of that, of people moving into the region specifically because they wanted to live in co-housing, and there just isn't much on offer, if anything on offer, throughout the rest of New Zealand. So some of the people, of retirement age, so that wasn't such an issue. Other people are more probably working in the digital space, so they can work remotely.
Mm-hmm.
So being in Takaka isn't such an issue. And there were also some locals who have moved in locally who were there anyway. But it's not necessarily going to work for everyone. It's not easy for everybody to relocate to Golden Bay.
Yes, so I get a big family feeling here, which is really what life's about. We all need to connect. And in this connected world, or the disconnected world digitally, that connection can be probably very strong, I'd say, that where people can say, look, I can ditch the computer and go out into the communal space like you would do on holiday. Because what do people do on holiday? They go from a $3 million property in Auckland and then bring their van down to Kai Territory and sit in the beachfront, and there's 15,000 people around them. I mean, the concept, you know, and they do that for 3 weeks of the year, and they go back to suburbia kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I can see where the overlap is. Can I ask you, from the cost point of view, are you so the housing model is to do with the building code determines really the outcome. What's the sort of footprint size of the properties on average?
So in the Takaka housing village, the footprint I think ranges from, it's about 80 square meters for the smaller homes to about 110 square meters for the larger three bedroom homes.
Okay.
We keep the footprint small, so that in those two-bedroom homes, we have a duplex model, so that keeps the footprint small by combining two houses together, and the three-story homes go across two floors. So that all helps free up more land for green space.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, from a sustainability point of view, is the building code that you've got, or is it a model that you can only build to that to what the co-housing project parameters are?
So I guess co-housing doesn't dictate how you have to build the house. Every house has to be built to code. We see code as bare minimum.
Right.
And so where our houses sit on that spectrum of quality or thermal performance, if you think of building code as one end of the spectrum, and something like a passive home, which is an incredibly thermally high-performing home standard, we probably sit about halfway between those two ends of the spectrum.
Okay. Last but not least, as a solar man, I've been looking for the solar panels on your property. Is there going to be a big solar development where it can be powered on its own or individually?
For the next neighbourhood we're building, on all the common facilities, so we'll have a communal shed and a common house, we will be putting solar on those roofs. And so that should probably provide about 30% of the demand of the village.
Oh, wonderful. That's a good way of looking. Given that time's against us, in a sense, it's a great way to wind up the interview. But certainly it's sparked my interest in many ways, and thank you for the opportunity, Vincent, of sharing with us, and we'll happily have you on the show later on in the development, in the next phase. So thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Okay, cheers. Thanks. Bye.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.